Coming up on today's show...
I think as long as you try and hold on to and keep as much of yourself as possible, that's what's going to connect with people. That's what's going to be real.
Welcome to another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment, featuring interviews with guests who are having success in entertainment, primarily music. I am Bruce Wozniak, proud member of the Recording Academy, talking to guests who are singers, songwriters, musicians, recording artists, and more from the worldwide music community. Get in touch with me by writing to podcast@nhte.net, or instead of email, you can DM me through the @NowHearThisEntertainment Instagram account. And you'll find that you take rest in. Joining me today on the Now Hear This Entertainment guest line from Cape Town, South Africa, my guest is a platinum-selling singer, songwriter, and producer whose latest single was released in February, as well as an official music video for it. He will be touring extensively in Europe in late October and most of November, doing 16 dates in 9 different countries. He has also performed here in the U.S. as well as in Thailand. His third album, released in 2019, earned 2 South African Music Awards, and he had made history in 2013 as the first debut to enter the South Africa iTunes album chart at number 1. He has close to 500,000 monthly listeners on Spotify, where his top 5 songs alone have combined for over 102 million streams. Plus, the videos on his YouTube channel have a combined total of almost 69 million views. You have been hearing a song of his called Take Yours. Welcome to Now Hear This Entertainment, Matthew Mole.
Hey, how's it going? What's up? Thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure, my pleasure. Thank you so much for making time to talk with me today. Let's get started by having you share with the audience first all about the song of yours that was just playing called Take Yours. When did you write it? Why did you write it? Where were you when you wrote it? Did you write it alone? Was it a co-write? Just give us all the details.
Yeah. So that song, Take Yours, it's actually it's a re-released version of the same song called Take Yours, I'll Take Mine. And it's actually one of the first songs that I ever officially released. So I wrote that song like 13 years ago, 14 years ago. Mm. I was living at home in my parents' house, and I wrote it alone. It was also one of the first songs I wrote. I mean, I had written a whole lot of songs before that, but I think none of them were any good. And then this was one of the songs where I thought, oh, this is nice. I want people to hear this. And looking back all those years ago, what I was writing about in that song was just finding direction in my life. Mm. I had just finished high school, and like I was trying to work out what I wanted to do with my life. And that was what I was talking about in the song. And then, it's gone on to continue to be the song that people want me to play live, and the song that people tell me about all these years later. Mm. And I'm grateful for it.
So what is the reason for the re-release? Because my mind goes to, well, he just said he wrote it 13, 14 years ago. He was a lot younger. Maybe he has a different take now. But I guess my argument would be, well, you could probably go back to a number of songs and say, oh my gosh, I would have done this different with this song. I would have done this different with that song. So just walk us through the strategy, the decision, what your mindset was in saying, I'm going to re-release that one.
Yeah, that's such a good point. There are so many of my songs that I'd love to re-record and reproduce just because of the way that they develop over time, especially playing them live. But that song, it's practically the reason was, there was a label based in France that wanted to release the song, but as a new version. It was 5 years newer than the original release. They just wanted there to be a new take on the song. They were able to then have the freedom to release it worldwide. And I'm grateful they did, because they did a good job on it. And then what I do like about it is the song still is the same song. And I had the opportunity to, I guess, as you say, recreate it in the way that I had imagined it 5 years after the first release. Because I mean, I play that song every time I play a show. That song is in the set, and playing it for so many years, there are certain changes that we make to the live version that I get more used to and comfortable with. So then I guess it represents that as well. It's kind of a slight development in the way that I would perform it and sing it and play it. So creatively, I was quite excited that the one song that people had connected with the most, I got to show them a different side of it. And then, yeah, I mean, the label, they're called Play 2, based in Paris, France. And they did a great job in spreading it around to more people that hadn't yet heard it. So, yeah, it all worked out quite nicely. I was quite happy with that.
I like that explanation. And I think that subliminally, Matthew, you're also providing a teaching moment for anyone in the audience who is an aspiring performer that I think because you're so close to the songs that you create yourself, it's easy to get defensive when someone comes to you and says, we'd like to re-release this. We'd like to do a few things different with it. Your defense mechanism is, well, what's wrong with it? There's nothing. The song is great. Why would you touch it? But I think what you've just taught the audience is you look at it as, hey, this is exciting. Hey, this is an opportunity. By the way, I'm grateful. Thank you for the interest. And now you just capped it off by saying it actually worked out better because you got so used to performing it a little bit differently anyways.
That's a good point. I mean, there wasn't ever a moment where I thought, oh no, there must be something wrong with the first version and they want me to redo it and somehow try to make it better, I guess. Yeah, like you're saying, it was more just, hey, that's quite an exciting challenge and opportunity. I mean, I guess this is like such a famous thing that art, I don't think is ever fully finished to the person that created it, but you just need to put it out there. And then I guess I got to kind of see the flip side of that is when I thought, oh, it was never fully finished. Maybe I can do a version now that does make it feel like it's fully finished. And again, probably isn't, but I just saw it as, yeah, here's another side of the song.
Good stuff. Good stuff. You've been on quite a journey since that 2013 debut that I mentioned in the intro when you entered the South Africa iTunes album chart at number one. I would love to hear how your sound has matured from what I understand was isolated bedroom production to now a rich, expansive soundscape incorporating synthesizers and ukuleles.
Yeah, that's cool. So like I said earlier, when I wrote that song, Take Yours, that we heard some of, I was living at home with my parents in Cape Town, South Africa, just a small little town, like outside of the main part of the city. And all I really knew at the time was I had a guitar and I had access to one of my parents' computers. And I somehow was able to figure out how to start putting music together myself. And just, I would write alone because I was so young. I didn't even think there was a way that you could write with other people. I didn't really know anything at all. Not that I know much more now, but I knew nothing back then. And that's what I did for the first album that I released. All of those songs were songs that I'd written alone in my bedroom. And then I'd gotten together with a producer by the name of Matthew Fink, and we re-recorded all of those songs that became my first album that was released in 2013. And then, yeah, the album, I was blown away and so grateful for all the support the album received. And then since then, I try my best to try and keep as much of that as possible, especially with writing. I love to co-write, so I'll try co-write with other writers as much as I can, but I still do a lot of writing alone. Most of it I do alone just because there's certain things that I want to keep learning to trust about the creative process and the way that I work. And then I think what's been awesome is when working with other people, I've learned so much more about how to produce things in certain ways or how to get more of what's going on in my brain out onto whatever the program is I'm using to create that song on my computer. I think, yeah, so I've tried to keep what was there from the beginning, but then so much has been built on top of that and added to that. And the people that I've had the privilege of working with have added so much. And I love intimate, like vulnerable sounding songs when it comes to the production. So I always want to try to keep that as much as possible.
Nice. Kind of continuing the topic of the evolution of your music, this latest single that you released in February is an example of you using your songwriting to process inner struggles. Tell us about the thematic shift from Overcoming Fear, that would be the Ghost Era, your 2019 album, which, by the way, audience, Matthew also did a live version of in 2020. Overcoming Fear, Matthew, in that Ghost Era, to your current focus on hope, companionship, and mental resilience.
Yeah, so that Ghost album, what I did talk about in that album was just, yeah, a lot of like stuff that I still deal with. And I think a lot of people do is just thoughts that aren't productive to being a human being, just like fearful thoughts mainly for me is just things like the worst possible outcome is going to be what's going to happen. And it was things like that that would just fill me with fear about the future and about my life and about relationships and all sorts of things. And what that Ghost album spoke about was like, what is the journey of trying to overcome these thoughts and these feelings and these moments in life? I like that. I like getting deep when it comes to songwriting. I think that's important for me at least. And then for this next release that we're talking about, In My Head, that was released in February, it's a similar theme, but it's kind of more progression of that journey where I think I've found certain things that help me to walk that journey of trying to overcome those fearful thoughts or those overbearing thoughts that aren't helpful to me as a human. And that's where I find my hope, is those things that help me through that, which could be something that I read somewhere, or it could be my wife or a family member or a good friend just being there for me. So many different things that it could be, but it's that In My Head song is talking about holding on to those things that give me hope and that get me through those moments.
This is all fascinating because you spoke earlier, just a brief reference when we were talking about Take Yours, about you performing that song live. And so if you think about writing songs that are about inner struggles, it's kind of heavy subject matter. And because people do love coming to see you perform live, they're going to ask themselves, gosh, I came here for a release, for a good time, for some fun, and this guy's got all this heavy stuff. Now, granted, if you're helping them process that, I mean, this could be a whole separate conversation in and of itself, but, you know, so it is fascinating to consider, okay, wait a minute, you know, does my audience come to my music for an escape, for some joy, for some hope, you know, and for some inspiration? Am I bringing them down? So I love this transition that you've showed us to where, look, this stuff is real, and Matthew Mole's not the only one that goes through it, but we can move on from that now, and we can look at hope, we can look at companionship, we can look at mental resilience.
Yes, for sure. That's 100% it. And at live shows, the feeling that's it's been a natural thing that's just happened. It's not even something that I try or have tried to orchestrate, really. Just there's been a natural thing where a live show and the live setting, and when I get to see people in real life and perform the songs, there is this feeling of hope and upliftment. And it might have something to do with the fact that I do enjoy writing songs that sound hopeful and joyful. So I quite like that balance between, or the contrast between, songs that might be quite heavy and serious, but then they also sound hopeful. So hopefully that will get the message of hope across. And it seems to be working so far. But again, it's just something that's naturally happening, and I'm not really purposefully trying to orchestrate it like that.
Nice. Be reminded, folks, that I have extended an open invitation for you to be a part of a mailbag segment on an upcoming episode of the show. Let me know what you are learning when you listen to Now Hear This Entertainment. Write to podcast@nhte.net. And on an upcoming edition of the show, I will read your email and at least your first name and where you are from as part of that mailbag segment. Or if you just want to have your note be what you like about the show, why you listen, or instead of a lesson learned, perhaps just an episode you particularly enjoyed and why. It is part of my ongoing efforts to be more interactive with the audience. I want you to know that you truly are valued, and I want to engage with you and get you to feel a part of this show. Matthew, let's roll up our sleeves a bit regarding production, your recording process. As I understand it, and you started to mention this briefly, you actually used to take a DIY approach. However, you have shifted to recording across actually multiple locations, London, Cape Town, and Johannesburg. How has stepping out of your comfort zone to work with co-producers influenced the positive tone of your music that you were just talking about?
Yeah, so I do still love the DIY approach when it comes to producing and recording music. So I would love to try and keep as much of that as possible. Sometimes it's not simple and it's not possible. Like, for example, when you're recording a drum kit, it's not the most ideal thing to try and find an Airbnb somewhere in the mountains and record a drum kit there. Although we have tried that a few times and it works some of the time. But yeah, so that whole thing between Cape Town, Joburg, London, it's actually like, it's my dream. I mean, whenever we've put an album together or even just a few songs together, for me, it's like those are huge milestones in my career. Just that creation process. For me, it's something that when I'm a lot older, one day I'll be able to look back on and remember how amazing and how grateful I was for the times when I got to record and create music that and call that my job. It sounds like such a cheat code. So I have this really amazing friend. His name's Brendan. Brendan Rousseau. He goes by the name Rusty, and he's like, I believe this guy is an actual genius. And he's from Cape Town, South Africa, but he moved to London, or he lives just outside of London in the countryside, and he's just started and created this amazing studio space there. So when we started working together, he was based in Cape Town, and we had certain locations we'd use to record drums or vocals or guitars or whatever it is. And then we found a few places in Johannesburg that we'd work in. Like one example is I was looking for an old B2 Hammond organ to record, and those things aren't very easy to find in South Africa because we don't have all of that old equipment. It's not as easy to come by here, and I didn't want to recreate that sound with a plug-in. And myself and Rusty, we both happened to be going to Johannesburg, so we made the time to go and record this one organ there, and that was a really good time. And then he moved to the UK, so then I'd spend a lot of the time going over to the UK to go to his studio and work on the stuff together there. So then it became this whole collab process where we'd be working between South Africa and the UK. And yeah, I think the way things work, the way technology is advanced and the way it works now, it makes that very easy. And it's just, yeah, for me, I just love the process so much. And I love the people that I get to work with so much. So it's just something I'm so grateful for again.
And audience, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention, go back, way back. This is, my gosh, 8 years ago. And it was episode 210 of the show. My guest was, sadly, the late Joey DeFrancesco. And he was inducted in the inaugural class of the Hammond Organ Hall of Fame.
Wow.
And so when you just heard Matthew talking about the B2, that's something that you're going to hear Joey and I talk about a lot on that interview. The following will continue the music-making conversation. Matthew, you have a unique ability to blend organic folk storytelling with danceable, upbeat electronic production. How do you strike that balance in the studio, though, without losing the vulnerability and intimacy of a traditional singer-songwriter?
Wow, that's so cool. That's so cool the way you put it. So I think the folky storytelling side of it is purely because the way I started writing songs was just me with a guitar. So that'll always be the foundation of the songs that I write, I think, because that's just how I've always done it. Every now and then all the time, I will try to write a song on a different instrument that I'm not as comfortable with and see what that brings out creatively. But I think just that the root of writing songs just from the story itself and then alone with one instrument is where that storytelling folky side of it will come out. And then I love layering that with like whatever it is. I mean, yeah, like maybe a danceable drum groove, some kind of disco groove or a disco bass line or something. And I've always loved, because when I first started playing shows, it was just me by myself. I would have to use different ways to fill up the sound on stage because I didn't have any other band members. I tried to bring that across in the recording, so there would be a lot of electronic stuff going on, like synths and like we were just talking about, like organs and electronic drum parts and stuff. And then that evolved as I started playing with more people on stage. But I think, yeah, the most important thing to me is the storytelling element of the song. The rest of it is all just bonus. All those layers that you get to add, as long as it doesn't take away from the message and the story that's being told, then I think it all works out the way that I hope it would.
Yeah, I like how you mentioned the balance because you do see performers that will have, say, a loop station. And for people that aren't familiar with it, the crowd gets a little too caught up in what are all those pedals that he's stepping on? And oh, I kind of think I'm getting what he's doing. And he's doing this. Now they're talking to their neighbor and they're missing out on what the message of the song is. So balance is a hugely important word in a literal and figurative way.
So true. That's such a good point. I mean, I've always I thought about it in the early days about incorporating a loop pedal, but I just didn't want to mess up live because like
Wow.
that's a high pressure situation, looping live. And if you mess it up, then you can really mess up the flow of the show. And then, like you're saying, get people talking and distracted. And that's one of the reasons why I never did that. But then also, I've never loved the idea of being constricted to the loop that I just created, which I've seen many people use loop pedals and they are incredible and amazing. I've never thought of going in that direction, but yeah, I agree with exactly with what you're saying. It's about finding that balance and what works for you and what hopefully brings everybody else into the story.
Yeah, something that I thought was really, really fascinating was I went to see Ed Sheeran in concert here in Tampa, and he played at the football stadium, American football, where the Tampa Bay Buccaneers play. So here's this stadium with, maybe 65,000 people, and it was just him alone on stage. And yes, he had a loop pedal, but then maybe a year and a half, 2 years later, I saw him again here in Tampa at a smaller venue. And he had a full band on stage with him, and I thought, no, this is
Oh wow.
backwards. So it
Yeah,
is,
that's crazy.
I think it's what you said, Matthew, that if you can perfect it, and it's not a distraction, then you pull it off, and it is a very full band sound, and the show does become about the lyrics, and of course, we're talking about Ed Sheeran, so certainly he was able to pull it off. But I think for the up and comers, it's an interesting lesson to consider.
Yeah, and I think it's also if you do go in that direction, it's an amazing skill to learn is how to not be a distraction or how to not create distraction and still create flow. I think that's an amazing thing to learn. And I also had the chance to see Ed Sheeran when he came to South Africa, and it was he was also just alone on the stage. It's amazing how he can capture the attention of tens of thousands. This stadium was a little bit smaller, it was about 55,000, but still, that's massive for one
Yeah.
guy alone on the stage.
Yeah.
Was amazing.
Yeah. Matthew, in a recent edition of the free weekly e-newsletter that I send out every Wednesday when a new episode of the show gets released, I was sharing that Now Hear This Entertainment was on the Apple Podcasts charts in Nigeria, ranking number 33. And what I was saying to the readers of that newsletter was how much it still touches me after all these years to see what, for me being in Florida, are people in a far-off land listening to my podcast? Recent streaming analytics show a fascinating geographical spread of your listener base. What is it like for you to witness your audience broadening significantly across markets like Germany and the UK, far from your hometown?
Yeah, wow. That's so amazing though to hear that it's reaching Africa and they're charting the podcast. It's so amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess the same similar feeling. I mean, I love that now you can release a song and it can immediately be available to someone that's never heard of me before that lives on the complete other side of the world. I think that's quite an amazing thing. And to see when something does connect in a part of the world that I've never been to, or that's so far away from where I live. It's amazing. I don't even know how to comprehend that really. It's such an amazing thing. I think it's an amazing opportunity for creatives like us. And yeah, I mean it's been cool to release songs, see them connect, and then eventually get the chance to go over there and see the people that the songs are connecting with and then perform for them live and then connect with them in person. It's an amazing thing and something I will never take for granted. It's really hard not to get overwhelmed by that, but it's a special thing.
Is there anything intentional about your behind the scenes effort that your team that works with you does? Anything intentional that you're trying to do where you are trying to respond other than this tour coming up in October and November where you say, okay, we seem like we're doing well in insert continent here, insert region, insert country here. Let's try to point more and push more into that area.
Yeah, that's for sure. I guess that's maybe a plan that a lot of people try and follow and stick to. And for a South African artist, it's quite a strange thing because what we have here in South Africa in the music industry and the creative industry as a whole, there's an amazing scene here. And I mean, the music that I make is just one of the smaller parts of the industry. the kind of music that I make is a much smaller part of the bigger South African music industry. And still, you're able to have a full all year round career performing and touring in this country, as small as it even is. So that makes it quite a hard thing for a lot of South African artists to leave behind and then try and spend more of the year away from home where nobody knows them. It's quite a tough thing, and it's quite a challenge, I think, for a lot of South Africans as well, especially on the South African rand, our currency. But when the opportunity comes up where, like you're saying, in October, November this year, we're going to head over to Europe and the UK, we've really been seeing an amazing connection there where a lot of people have found some of my songs, and they have been deciding to come to concerts whenever I've gone over there. So it's amazing to me. So we take every opportunity we can when it's possible to go over there to the people, see them face to face, speak to them, sing the songs for them live, and hopefully that will grow as much as possible. That's the plan. So far, things are looking great, and it's been an amazing time. But yeah, we try to stick to that as much as possible and keep an eye on where people might be listening and where people might be connecting the most.
Good, good. I like it. I am joined today on the Now Hear This Entertainment guest line from Cape Town, South Africa, by platinum-selling singer, songwriter, and producer Matthew Mole. Visit his official website at matthewmole.com. I will have a link to it on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. His newest single is called In My Head. Find Matthew's music, gosh, practically anywhere. Spotify, Apple Music, iTunes, Amazon Music, YouTube Music, Deezer, the list goes on. Late October and most of November, he will be in Europe, the UK, Ireland, Belgium, the Netherlands, Germany, Denmark, Austria, Switzerland, and Spain. On MatthewMole.com, you will see dates and locations for all of those. Engage with Matthew on social media, Facebook, X, Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok, a combined total of more than 363,000 followers, subscribers across those five platforms combined. And of course, follow him on Spotify as well. In the intro, I mentioned close to 500,000 monthly listeners on there. As I mentioned earlier about the mailbag segment, I do want to engage with the audience and get feedback. I ask you to consider buying me a virtual cup of coffee as a way of letting me know that you like the podcast and as a show of support for Now Hear This Entertainment. On my podcast website, nhte.net, there is a bright yellow Buy Me a Coffee button. Tap or click on that to be taken to that platform, where you will also be able to post a message, and I will write you back, just like you will see guests and listeners having already done. This is not a sponsor, by the way. They are not paying me to talk about them, and I'm pretty sure they don't even know that I am. Instead, this is merely a method for us to further engage together. Check it out. Tap or click that bright yellow Buy Me a Coffee button at nhte.net. Matthew, we started to talk about this before I gave all those online destinations out, but I just want to dig into this a little further. I was mentioning all the European countries that you're going to be going to later this year, and it's obviously some really great international momentum. So how does it feel to see your uniquely South African roots resonate so strongly with European audiences? I imagine you could tour throughout South Africa and get a different reaction from different parts of South Africa, but to go to an entirely different continent, you know, you have that luxury. You can go tour. I can say that it's done well. This podcast has done well on the Apple Podcast charts in Nigeria. I'm not going to go to Nigeria and connect in person with those listeners. So does that kind of make you feel like there's, I don't want to overstate it, but maybe a second home for Matthew Mole and his music?
Wow, that's so cool. Maybe you should pay a visit to Nigeria, see how it's going. But my wife, she's South African, but she's a dual citizen. She's also a British citizen. So there were a few years where we based ourselves out of London as well, because it was closer to Europe, and it actually did become a second home for us, which was amazing, such an amazing time in our lives. But then, because we're both from South Africa, we wanted to be back home. Not for the rest of our lives. You never know what's going to happen, but for the next period of our lives, this current period of our lives. We wanted to be back here, and it's been an amazing time. But going over to Europe every now and then, we go a few times a year. It really does feel like a second home, and the fact that music plays a part in that, it's crazy. It's so crazy to me. I never would have imagined that when I started writing songs more than 10 years ago. And just the fact that that's a possibility now to be able to go over and see people, it's amazing. One thing that's also been quite cool is like there are quite a lot of South Africans, more than I realized, that live in so many other parts of the world. I don't know how many you might run into in Florida, but there are quite a few in Europe and the UK as well. So that feels even more like home, I guess, when I see them when I'm going on tour. But it's just been an amazing journey so far.
Yeah, listening to you describe the amount of time that you have spent there and that you do continue to spend there, I have to believe that the audience starts to get to know you. And when they learn, okay, he's not just doing a dine and dash or whatever the phrase is that I'm looking for, where you're just going to go in there, do some shows and quote unquote, take their money and leave. Okay, he's kind of someone that comes around here a lot. He's put down something resembling roots here. And so I imagine that it's a little bit of a warmer connection, faster connection, the audience embracing you because you're not someone who shows up and does a smash and grab and you're gone. And they go, I guess it was a good show, but, I think that guy, will we ever see him again?
Yeah, that's a very good, it's a really cool way to look at it. I mean, the more that I've gone over, the more I've noticed and felt a warmer embrace each time that I go back. And I guess the people that continue to come back to shows when I return, I'm so grateful to them. That's amazing, because I guess it means that they liked something and they wanted to come back again. And that's how I feel about going to wherever anyone is that wants to listen to the songs. I mean, I want to go back as much as possible wherever I can, because people have been so kind and so supportive. And the fact that they exist and want me to be there and play songs for them and connect with them is huge. I mean, that's why I started writing music in the first place, was to connect with people and help people feel heard and help people feel some form of hope.
Wow.
So I think, to be able to do that in person is the most important way, I think. And I hope people think that. I hope they think that I'm in it for the long run and not just going to dine and dash. I'll keep going for it as long as possible.
Awesome. At the beginning of our conversation, you said that Take Yours is a song that you will always play anytime that you're live somewhere. It is said that, quote, translating introspective, sometimes heavy lyrical themes into a high energy, uplifting live performance, end quote, is a hallmark of your shows. How do you craft a set list to take the audience on an emotional journey, especially for the likes of, say, a major hometown show, for example?
Wow, that's a really nice quote. That's very cool. The live performance it's a fun one. For me, it's always been a challenge, but a challenge that I love is the journey of a live show. And that can also be completely different when it's, say, a 30-minute show, like a support show, or an almost 2-hour-long headline show here at home in Cape Town. They can all be so different. But I think there are a few things that I love to make sure happen in a show. And the first one is the journey of the live show. So the dynamics in the show, like how it starts and how you kind of introduce your show to everybody. And then hopefully it comes down to a quieter moment where you're able to kind of speak and engage and look at people in their eyes. And then maybe you bring it back up to another energetic moment. You know, it's all the tricks that people try to pull off when they put a live show together. But for me, those things are very important, because like you mentioned earlier, it's easy for some of the things that I sing about to come across as quite heavy and deep. But throughout the show, the goal is that people feel like they want to be there, obviously, and they feel welcome and they feel uplifted, really, and they feel heard. And all of those things, when they do work out and they work together, then I don't know, it turns out to be a wholesome almost 2 hours of everyone's time. And I mean, when people choose to spend their valuable time watching me perform on stage, it's crazy. So I want them to feel as welcomed and heard and seen as possible, and they're giving that to me, so I need to give them that as much as I possibly can.
Nicely said, nicely said. You mentioned your better half. You and I are recording this the day before my 10-year wedding anniversary, so it really touches me
No
that
ways.
your relationship with your wife grounds your work. I wonder, though, how do you navigate the boundary between protecting your private life and writing open autobiographical lyrics?
Sure, yeah, that's a good one. But firstly, congratulations.
Thank you.
That is incredible. That's
Thank you.
amazing. My wife and I actually very recently celebrated our 10-year wedding anniversary as well. So that's really cool.
Very
Nice.
nice.
So when I met my wife, I had already started this journey of releasing, recording, releasing, and performing and touring. And we learned more and more as we grew together and as we lived life together. And I will always do everything I can, the most that I possibly can, I will do to protect her. Her name's Jess. And I won't ever write things like I might write very vulnerable, exposing songs, but I would never release those, I don't think. And my goal when I release songs and write songs that I know people might hear is that they will feel some kind of hope from that song. So I won't ever release a song just because I think, oh, this is cool and vulnerable in an exposing way. So I'll only the main goal is, if I release the song, what's someone going to take away from it? Like, is it going to be hopeful, or is it just going to make them feel sad while at the same time I expose all the ins and outs of and vulnerabilities of my marriage? And so for me, that's just, I write so many songs about my wife. Most of the songs I write are not actually about my wife, but I do still write a lot of songs about her, and the ones that I do release, which is maybe it's probably all of the songs, they're always going to be love songs talking about how amazing she is and how much better my life is because she's in it. So those are things that I do want people to hear, because I think it's important for people to see other people loving each other and to hear how other people love each other and show love in certain ways. So yeah, I mean, it hasn't been a very difficult thing, because I feel more scared to be vulnerable in other ways about the things that go on in my head, like fear. So I just feel proud that the woman that I'm married to, she's amazing. I do not deserve her. So whenever I get to tell everyone at a show, hey, look, here's a song about Jess, it's exciting for me because I just get to show off that I've got an awesome wife.
I know where you're coming from. I know where you're coming from.
Nice.
Something that I really admire, Matthew, is that maintaining humility amidst international success is crucial for you. Take us through your deep connection to the Cape Town outdoors, from trail running around Lion's Head to morning hikes up Elsie's Peak, and how nature acts as a vital anchor in a chaotic industry.
Yeah, it really does. Nature really does do that. It's amazing. I mean, Cape Town is, I think, it's known, one of the things it's known for is the people here that are environmentalists, and they really need the nature. And I love that, because where I grew up, it was a small part of Cape Town called Sun Valley, which is like this tiny little suburb, and it's like surrounded by the mountains, and there's two beaches on either side of the place. So that's just what I've grown up knowing my whole life. And then whenever I've left that, I still love that too, because I love to see, it's been a dream of mine to see as much of the world as possible. But being grounded here in Cape Town, I don't know, it's something, it's so hard to explain. It's just, I guess it's home, even though home isn't always a place. For me, it's just being able to be here. As much as I've had the privilege of being here, I've didn't realize how important it is for my process and my journey as a songwriter and a creator. And you mentioned it now, I love trail running. I spend a lot of time in the mountains, and my wife and I will take our dogs for walks along the beach or in the forest here. And it's a lifestyle that I'm so grateful for. And if that's not always the case, and we live anywhere else in the world, that's fine. I mean, like I said, home isn't always a place. I guess for me, my home is Jess, my wife. But Cape Town, it's an amazing place. So hopefully you will get the chance to come here if you haven't already, and then I can show you some of the mountains or the beaches.
I have not, and I would love to. And audience, I can echo what Matthew is saying. I interviewed Alex Simon back on episode 622. He performs under the name Tone Ranger. On the show page for Matthew's episode on nhte.net, I'm going to put a link to the conversation with Alex Simon, as well as the Joey DeFrancesco interview that I referred to. But Alex talked about New Mexico and getting out in nature and being under the stars, and in fact, how that actually influences the music that he creates. But here in Florida, I don't own it, but I have a friend that has a condo that I go out to the beach. And gosh, you just kind of forget about everything else and you connect with nature and it's so peaceful. And Matthew, I think, that kind of does go hand in hand with the messages that you've been describing that you're trying to create and the hope that it gives you and the peaceful feeling that we're all trying to achieve.
Oh, for sure. It's so true. And the way you're explaining it now, it reminds me like a lot of we were talking about DIY producing and recording. And what I've loved to do sometimes is there are a few places that I've been able to find. I'll go onto a website somewhere on the internet and just find like a short-term rental, really like a week or two at a time, and find an awesome, it's so amazing, find like an awesome cabin somewhere in the mountains here, just outside of Cape Town. One of the reasons for that is if you're in the mountains just outside of Cape Town, there aren't going to be as many people nearby, so you can make a lot of noise and hit the drums and stuff. But it's also, yeah, like you're saying, it really adds to that atmosphere in that during that creation process of peacefulness and home and grounding. And it's, yeah, like you bringing this up is making me realize how much I didn't realize that was contributing to the process for me. So thanks for that.
You're welcome. You're welcome. And, I think sadly, this whole cabin in the woods thing has kind of fallen into the cliche category, and it should not, because there's something to it. I'm also thinking of last September, episode 606, Brett James, who, my gosh, so accomplished and so tragic. We recorded that interview on September 11th, and a week later, he was killed in a private plane crash. And, Brett had talked on that interview. And mind you, for those of you that don't know him, wow, he had written an astounding 27 number one songs. He had more than 800 of his songs recorded by some of the biggest artists in the world, Grammy Award winner. And Brett talked about that he was going to be doing that later last year. He was going to be going to the proverbial cabin in the woods to work on his own solo artist project because, in the craziness of Nashville and all this pressure of writing for these A-list artists, you do need that escape and you do need to clear your head and you do need to relax and unwind, but it does give you a very different focus on your music. So, yeah, Matthew, I think maybe we both needed to have this conversation for ourselves to remind us that there's tremendous mental health value to those getaways.
Oh, they so are. It's really true, and it is a good point that you're making that it sadly has become a bit of a cliche, the cabin in the woods idea, and it's I guess maybe for a reason because it's people, so many people have given it a try and found out that it actually really is an amazing experience, and I think the way you've put it is so perfect. It's you just get to shift your focus and you get to be. I, for me at least, I get to feel a little bit more present during the whole creation process of whatever that is that I'm creating at the time.
Yeah, there's no distractions and you can just let it flow naturally the way it was intended to. Let's look ahead. With the new single having been released in February and the European shows in late October and most of November, what's the creative focus for your next body of work? Are you leaning further into the collaborative space or feeling the pull back to your solo roots? What are you able to disclose at this point?
Oh yeah. So one important note is I have just at from the start of this year, it's been a dream for I would say almost 10 years. It's been a dream to be an independent artist, and I've had the privilege of working with amazing labels, record labels and partners in the industry that have done so much to help me, and they really have been amazing. I've had a really positive experience with record labels, but at the same time, I have always wanted to be an independent artist, and that comes with its challenges. It hasn't always been possible because the challenges have been too much for me to be able to have been an independent artist this whole time. But now I am. So from the start of this year, it's very, very exciting. And it's also played a part in changing the shift and the focus and the way that I'm seeing the whole process of creating and the songs that I'm writing. So it's such a good question, the way you've asked it, because I do collaborate with people, and there are other creators and producers specifically, and a few songwriters that I have worked with on some songs and that I will continue to work with. But at the same time, I'm going to go back to a lot of those roots and the way that I used to create songs. And I've been writing a lot over the past few months from the start of this year. And that's been a huge thing, is just trying to be present and not overthink stuff. And now that I don't have a whole lot of other partners and industry partners and label partners putting extra pressure on me, it's really helped. I do like pressure, but it's been an amazing thing just to know, okay, it's all me really now. And it's been an amazing thing to witness and experience what that's done and what that's brought to the creative process. So yeah, I'll be working with a few people. Like Rusty is one of them. Again, I love Rusty, and I'll head it back out to the UK soon to work with him. And I've got a few other friends that I love to write with as well. And at the same time, I've also just been writing a lot and producing a lot by myself. So I'm trying not to overthink it, but I think what's going to come together in the end, and whatever that full package looks like in the end, it's going to be something I'm going to be proud of.
Nice. I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you for a little piece of advice for anyone in the audience who is an aspiring performer. I think it's easy to fall into the trap of, wow, he did this all DIY. He was doing it out of his bedroom, and now he's got this unbelievable list of all the stats that Bruce is reading off, all the followers, all the streams, etc. As much as I want to say, can you tell them how you did it? Obviously, if you could tell them how you did it, then everybody would just be following that blueprint, and it would sound like a formula that's real simple to follow. So maybe kind of a either a 50,000-foot view, Matthew, of how you think that ascent happened, or perhaps some real specific piece of advice that you'd want to share.
Yeah. So the way that you've asked that is perfect, because obviously the blueprint thing, the problem with trying to follow a blueprint is that it takes away from who someone might be, and it might show people less of who they are. And I think that for me is the most important thing. I was fortunate enough starting out where I was writing songs just for myself, like a lot of almost everyone has done. They would write songs for themselves, and then something connected, and then they began their music career. But what I benefited from through that process was the early songs that I made were very me, I think, because I was just making them for me. So it was kind of all very Matthew. And I think that's something that I've tried to hold on to, that I think is very important for anyone that wants to write music and create music and release and perform, is to try. It sounds so cheesy and cliche, but it's to try and be as much of yourself as possible. Obviously, you should draw inspiration and listen to the music that you love, and create music that inspires you, that you've been inspired by. But I think as long as you try and hold on to and keep as much of yourself as possible, that's what's going to connect with people. That's what's going to be real. I think trying to fabricate being real and organic, people can see right through that. So I think as long as you just remain yourself, that is really one of the most important things. And the coolest part about that is it's very easy to be yourself, because you already are yourself. So as long as you just embrace who you are, I think that'll do a lot of the work. And then, I mean, when it comes to the DIY at home thing, we live in 2026, where everyone, almost everyone, has access to a lot of basic equipment that you need to get started. And that's very exciting to me, is how many people have access to be able to do that.
No
But yeah, I
doubt.
think most important thing, be yourself.
Yeah, the expression "be yourself, everyone else is taken."
That's so true. I love that expression.
We are going to close today with another one of Matthew's original songs. It is the single that he released in February that I have alluded to, during our conversation today titled In My Head. Matthew, I know you spoke about it a little bit earlier, but before I let you go and we play that track, just share with the audience a bit more all about this one, if you would, please.
Yeah, so this is In My Head. It's one of those songs that I did record across a few different cities and countries and loved the process. And this is a song that I wrote about some of those thoughts that I have, fearful thoughts that try to get in the way of me just living the life that I want to live. And through that process, I've found the things that help me navigate those things, whether that's Jess, my wife, like that we spoke about, or friends of mine, or my family. And those are the people, those are the things that give me hope through those situations. And the song's talking about holding on to those pieces of hope, because that's what really will get you through maybe some of those dark times. So that's what I was writing about when I wrote the song. And I wanted it to sound as hopeful and joyful as possible. So hopefully, yeah, maybe when you listen to the song, you will feel some form of a hope.
And audience, remember that there is an official music video for that on Matthew's YouTube channel as well. Matthew, this has been amazing. Thank you ever so much for making time to be on Now Hear This Entertainment. I really enjoyed the conversation.
Thank you so much. And hopefully, who knows, maybe we'll chat again when you're in South Africa, or I'll come visit you in Florida. But thank you so much for your time and for chatting.
You bet. Yeah. You bet. Audience, with that, I will wrap up another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment. My sincere thanks to platinum-selling singer, songwriter, and producer Matthew Mole. Do visit his official website at matthewmole.com. As I mentioned earlier, I will have a link to it on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. You are about to hear his newest single. When you love it, and when you also want to get at his back catalog, find Matthew's music across numerous digital music retailers: Spotify, Apple Music, iTunes, Amazon Music, YouTube Music, Deezer, the list goes on. It bears repeating, late October and most of November, he will be in Europe, the UK, Ireland, Belgium, the Netherlands, Germany, Denmark, Austria, Switzerland, and Spain. On matthewmole.com, you will see dates and locations for all of those shows. Engage with Matthew on social media. This morning, I followed him on Facebook, X, Instagram, and TikTok, and I'm sure he would appreciate you doing the same. We did not get a chance to talk about his wildly successful YouTube channel. Anyhow, a combined total of more than 363,000 followers, subscribers across the five social media platforms that I mentioned. And of course, follow him on Spotify as well. Close to 500,000 monthly listeners on there. That will do it for episode 646. Thanks ever so much for listening. I'll send you out today with another song from Matthew Mole. This is the one he just talked about. It's called In My Head.
When I get tongue-tied, when I'm on the front line, when I feel lost, when I feel lost, you know what it feels like, you know what I feel right, you know what it cost, you know what it cost. Am I in my head? Am I in over my head? Am I in my head? Am I in over my head? I wanna see you tonight. I love your eyes. I wanna see you tonight. I need your light. The days will be colder before they get brighter. But then I'll be strong. But then I'll be strong. And when I get older, and when I get wiser, I'll know what it costs.